Culture Affidavit, episode 166. Another Geek Gathering, the 2025 Baltimore Comic Con. Hello and welcome to episode 166 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panarese. Well, after a summer hiatus, I am back with my annual Baltimore Comic-Con episode. This is the 12th or 13th convention I've attended in recent years, and it was also the first convention in a long time that I've attended by myself. If you've been listening to these over the years, you know that I have had my kid, Brett, with me for the past, 8 or 9 years or so, since they were a little kid. Well, Brett's not really a little kid anymore. In fact, they turned 18 back in July and then headed off to college in August. This year's Baltimore Comic Con was held the weekend of October 17th through 19th, and since Brett's been doing their college thing, they weren't able to attend. But we did get to see them the weekend before for Parents Weekend, and I promised I would venture down Artist Alley for them, so there is a little tangential Brett content in here a little bit. And that's what made this year's convention different for me. What also made it different was that it was this year's big meetup convention for the community of geeks, which I'm a part. Shag put together a large group chat for anyone attending, and that meant seeing some people I hadn't seen in a number of years and meeting a few others. Con prep, however, was more or less the same. I paid for a VIP ticket again because I really liked that experience last year, and I did like the swag that came with it. I also gathered my signature pile, and I managed to hold myself to my promise of only getting those signatures I absolutely wanted. That wound up being 7 in total, although the 7th was really just on a whim. From there, I gathered my bag, my cash, my snacks, and I hit the road for a 3-hour drive from Baltimore to Charlottesville. I guess that is another change I should mention. So in years past, I'd be staying at my in-laws in Stafford, Virginia, which is, the halfway point more or less between Baltimore and Charlottesville for me. But my mother-in-law recently sold her house, so I left around 4:45 in the morning from my house in Charlottesville to drive to Baltimore. I could have left later, but complicating things this year was that the Baltimore Running Festival, which I found out maybe just a couple of weeks before the convention, was being held on the same day. And I'm just going to take a minute here to thank a few random organizations or people. First, the convention itself. You know, the Baltimore Con is planned way in advance. By the time the show's over, you know next year's dates. So I'm putting the blame for the weird scheduling with the running thing and the convention on the running people because the Geek Con had been scheduled already. But the convention organizers, if you sign up for their mailing list, they communicate like crazy. And not just like promotional stuff. They always have those emails of how to get there, getting around there. And they sent out emails specifically regarding the race and some information about where to park, what streets were closed, and those sorts of things. So it was really, really convenient. They'd done that in years past. And I also have to thank Spot Hero, believe it or not. So I had a garage reserved prior to finding out about the race, but I had to change the garage because the street was going to be closed. I was able to just simply switch my spot, use the credit that I got from moving the garage. And then I was running early coming up and added a half hour to my reservation in the morning with no charge. It was, you know, sometimes I'm like not a big fan of apps for everything, but that app and all the Parking Panda and like all those different apps are really one of the better conveniences out there because I would have hated the idea of trolling for a spot in the city or having to set aside the cash and all that other stuff. And this just made it really, really easy. And why was I a half hour ahead of schedule? I'm going to thank VDOT and EasyPass because they have an EasyPass lane on I-66 and the Beltway, and it goes in both directions at the same time. And then the Maryland Department of Transportation had clean restrooms at their rest stop. I mean, just these little things made the trip up and the trip back way more pleasant than it could have been had there been a lot of inconveniences. So the time I got to the convention at 7:30 and just kind of hung out in front of the convention hall with the maybe 10 or 11 people who were in line, I was feeling really good. And once the doors opened, I picked up my VIP kit, which included a t-shirt. And the t-shirt had the program cover on it, which was Paper Girls as drawn by Cliff Chang. So I was really psyched about that. There was a print of some Marvel Heroes by Adam Kubert, a copy of the yearbook, which was featuring Jeff Smith's Bone, and of course my tag. And, you know, you sit around in this line for the VIP people, and I think I was maybe 15th or 20th in line. And what I always love about that is that, you know, for as socially awkward as we all are as nerds, like, we're very easy to conversate with. And talking to random people about what had been happening, what they've been doing at the convention and that sort of thing is always fun as you're going in because it passes the time really well. And apparently the day before, when they let everybody into the convention, they had told everybody to take the escalator and some guy just bolted down the stairs. And it got out of hand to the point where the police were called. At least the guy was telling me. I don't know the whole story, but I do know that when they let us in, they were like really insistent that we use the escalator. And we're like, all right, yeah, I mean, it's a half hour before the thing opens. You don't get prizes for being the first one through the door. In fact, I think the first thing I did was hit the exclusives booth to get the t-shirt and then look and see what they had if I wanted to pick anything up later. I didn't, by the way. Because honestly, the con from 9:30 to 10, by the way, ghost town. And that was the case last year. Last year, when I did the early admission, I actually got, I think, almost all the signatures I was there for. This year, I only got one of them because the people who were on my list were not at the convention yet. And that one wasn't even on my list. I stopped by Dave Peterson's booth. He draws Mouse Guard. And Brett had bought like the first three hardcovers over the last few years. So I was like, well, maybe I'll see if he's got anything new so I can send to my kid. And had a few issues of a miniseries, and I also bought a sketch cover from him. So he sketched one of the Mouse Guard on the cover of the book, and we chatted for a while. And it was really cool to watch him sketch the cover for Brett. Other signatures that I got once we were fully open were Cliff Chang. I didn't have anything to bring him. I had thought of maybe just skipping it because I figured he'd have a line, but it was early enough that he had no line. I was like, well, why don't you sign my program? Because I always love going to see him. And I just told him how much I love Paper Girls. It's one of my favorite series. And then I told him how much I thought the Catwoman Lonely City book was freaking awesome. And I'm thinking if he's going to be there next year, I may pick up the complete collection Paper Girls in trade, because that way I can have it on my shelf and maybe offload the individual issues, but also can have something for him to sign, because it's always really cool to see him. I was hoping that he'd have something on sale too, like the last time I saw him when I bought the Catwoman Lonely City first issue from him, but unfortunately he did not. So after that, I had a few more signatures on my list. One was Zoe Thorogood. Her graphic novel, It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth, was one of my favorite graphic novels of this year. It came out earlier this year. So I had that for her to sign, and she was selling a bunch of her other stuff, one of which was a Creepshow comic book anthology, I believe Dark Horse put out, and she contributed to that. And I was like, all right, awesome, horror comics. So I got that and she signed it. And my only regret was that I didn't have a longer conversation with her, because this was around noon and she was just around the corner of the booth for Becky Cloonan, who had a line wrapping around that set of booths. So I kind of had to squeeze by the line, and I was kind of crammed in between the Becky Cloonan people and Zoe. And it was kind of an awkward moment. And I just said how much I liked it and I really enjoyed it. She was like, thank you very much. And it was kind of overstimulating at that point too. I've been at the convention for a few hours and here's all these people and stuff, but that was still pretty cool. I wish I had brought something for Becky Cloonan to sign, by the way. And maybe I'll plan ahead next year a little bit more. But I had literally done my best to limit my signatures to just a few people. Charles Vess was another signature for me. I met him a number of years ago. I remember buying his coloring book. I don't know if I had him sign anything. I think I remember talking to him about how much I love the Midsummer Night's Dream issue of Sandman that he did. And then I bought the coloring book off of him. And this time around, I brought with me the Spider-Man Spirits of the Earth graphic novel. I found it in hardcover. So I had him sign that, and I bought a copy of his novel, which is called The Queen of Summer's Twilights. When teenager Janet Ravenscroft is rescued from the nighttime streets of Inverness by a mysterious man on a black motorbike, little does she imagine what lies in store. How could she know that this man holds the key to the mysteries that have plagued her life, her mixed heritage, her father's casual cruelty, her mother's absence, her sense that she's never belonged? How could she know that her search for answers would lead her from the familiar world of the contemporary Scotland to the realm of the fairy, and that her life, her very soul, would be in jeopardy? Sounds like a cool fantasy novel, so I will let you know how that one turns out once I finally read it. Now, I had two more signatures for comics, and they were the two most important for me. One was Mike Norton. You're probably familiar with his artwork if you read the Image series Revival. I actually have all the trades. I brought the first one with me. Great series, by the way. But more importantly, he drew the back two-thirds of The Waiting Place, which Sean McKeever wrote and I covered in episode, I want to say 49. This is an all-time favorite series of mine. It's a high school teen drama romance type of book. And the artists on the first volume were Brendan and Brian Frame, who I had signed my copy of The Complete Waiting Place a few years ago. And then, or actually a long time ago at this point. And then he was there. I saw him on there. I'm like, I have to bring this. So I got a chance to tell him how much I loved the comic. I got a chance to tell him how much I loved that they did an epilogue or like a so many years later portion, or IDW, I think it was, put out the like complete collection, one volume omnibus type, and they added like this extra story of the, what happened to the characters like 5 years later. And he was very happy to hear that. And I even said, I would love to see another story, like, you know, come back to this like every once in a while and do a one shot or something. And I know that's like, you know, wishful thinking, but he even said he's been thinking about the series and that would be really cool. And he's like, well, Sean's not doing anything. Maybe I should call him. So we chatted for a little while. He's an incredibly nice guy. And I would love to meet Sean McKeever, by the way. If he ever comes, I'm definitely bringing that with me. And my final comic signature was a big deal to me because it was somebody I've met several times by now, almost like every year. And that's Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Praise be his name. He signed my copy of the DC Comics Style Guide. If you remember last year, this was a pretty big deal. It was the Standards Manual Publishing Company put out a hardcover reprint. It was expensive, it was like $100 or so. And I got it because I've always wanted to see this in person, so to speak. I've seen so many scans and different things of it. And also, you know, I mean, this is not, I'm not the only person who feels like this, but this style guide was one of the things that really defined what superheroes looked like for me when I was a kid, especially the DC ones. And I wanted that book for that nostalgia value, for that kind of symbolic importance. And then to have him sign it was just so very cool. And I wasn't the only one. There were a few people who were walking around with it. I brought it in the box it was shipped in because I was like, I want to make sure that this doesn't get like, you know, dented or beat up as I lift my bag, put my bag down, et cetera, over the course of the day. I got a couple more signatures in a couple of random ways. I swung by the Hero Initiative booth and I bought a copy of Superman number 69 signed by Dan Jurgens, along with a two pack of Robin issues. It was like 40 and 41 that were signed by Chuck Dixon. The Hero Initiative will have like short boxes of comics that are signed by various people for various prices. And these were like $5 and $10, I think. So it wasn't very expensive. I did a little bit of shopping before I finished my kind of signature run. I went to the Tomorrow's Publishing booth and got Comic Book Implosion. I had that digitally, but I wanted the hard copy. So they said it was an updated edition, which is pretty cool. And I went to the booth for Ignition Press, which is a publishing company that I think, I want to say, launched earlier this year. They've had a ton of number ones come out over the summer. And now they're up to kind of like the second issues in some of these series. And I've really enjoyed what I've seen. One of my favorite ones of theirs so far is called Murder Podcast. And it's only on its second issue, but they had a zero issue that they were selling at the booth there. So that was really cool to get. And then I bought the trade paperback of a series that just launched its kind of second iteration called The Beauty. It's a really weird, like, sci-fi crime series where, like, this STD comes along, but it makes people beautiful. So people are, like, willingly getting it. But then you see that, unfortunately, like, it's been raising the metabolism of people to the point where they, like, basically spontaneously combust or explode from within. And the two lead detectives are trying to track down, like, a cure or something to solve this problem. And it's really, really fascinating. And then there's a back half of it is just stories that take place in this world where the beauty is, and there are a little bit of crime, a little bit of romance and things. And I've really, really enjoyed reading it. I think I read it inside of like a day. It was a pretty thick volume. And there's a couple of other ones. So it's really cool to get some of that stuff. And I would recommend checking out what Ignition Press has to offer. And then there were the celebrity guests. So two that I was interested in were Giancarlo Esposito, and I did not pull the trigger on that one because I had to decide based on the amount of money. Although I did see him while I was in line for the guy whose signature I did get. And that was Michael Biehn. So if you know who Michael Biehn is, he played Kyle Reese in The Terminator, and most importantly for me, he played Hicks in Aliens. And so I went ahead, I ponied up the money for an autograph. And with that autograph, I could get a quick picture with him. And I had him sign my VHS copy of Aliens, the same one that Jeanette Goldstein signed last year. And I wanted to talk to him about a movie. And I told him how much my dad and I used to watch his movies and such. And like all the action movies in the 80s and the early 90s. And I mentioned a movie he did about like, oh, it was like 90 or 91 called Time Bomb. And it's very much like a history of violence, like that type of story, because he played this guy who was like basically had been brainwashed out of being a secret agent and people were on the run, and Robert Culp's in it. And he sat and talked to me for a good like 5-6 minutes about just recalling the filming and who was in it and everything. And it was really, really cool to hear him talk about it, because I'm like, do you remember, like, you know, do you even remember this movie? It was like a direct-to-video movie in the early 90s. So, you know, I'm not asking him about The Terminator or Aliens or The Abyss or Navy SEALs or anything like that, where he got bigger billing and had a bigger audience. So he was really gracious and very, very nice. And it was great to meet him. And it was very, very worth the money. And by 12:30 or so, I was really done with the signatures. I was popping in and out of various places around Artist Alley as well. And after lunch, I was able to shop and hang out with friends without any pressure to do anything. None of the panels were interesting, or for me anyway, or wasn't anything I was going to attend. So I hung out with a bunch of people, got lunch with Stella and Harrison Shute, and also went up and down Artist Alley. And Artist Alley is where I'm going to go right after this.
It's the year 1992, and the Justice Society of America, the world's first superhero team, make a triumphant return after 6 years trapped in another dimension. Finally home, the JSA find themselves relics in a world that has moved on. It's the age of pulse-pounding action, where the rules of fair play are tossed aside for gritty violence. Our heroes ask themselves, does the world still need a Justice Society? Oh, yes, it does. Join me, the Irredeemable Shag, for JSA in the 90s. We'll delve into the 10-issue Justice Society of America ongoing series, drawn by the iconic Mike Parabek. We'll explore the 8-issue retroactive miniseries and unearth hidden gems from the era. Join us for JSA in the 90s, available as part of the Justice Society Presents podcast feed.
So next up is a segment that I've really enjoyed over the last several years, and that's a trip up and down Artist's Alley. I've got 5 interviews today with artists and writers, and I'm going to start with a fellow podcaster and friend of Stella's who is promoting his own book, and he is the co-host of Questions We Don't Have Answers. It's Harrison Shute. So here he is talking about his graphic novel.
My name is Kim Jung-ho.
Okay.
I'm a writer. And Martian Sun is kind of a self-published imprint for short sci-fi horror stories in comic form.
So what is about Joaquin you find in it?
Yes. I like to stay pretty in tune with what's going on in the world, so I try to implement issues that we're facing today and things like that.
Okay. And what type of stories are we going to see in the collection?
Yeah, it's categorized as sci-fi horror, but that's just kind of a catch-all. But there's fantasy stories and a love letter to Korean revenge, but certainly a lot of speculative and spooky.
Cool.
There's a story about sex robots.
Okay.
It's one of Stella's favorites. A lot more sort of a guts and gore kind of thing.
And the trade is What Divine Anguish. You can buy it here at the con. Can you also buy it online?
Yes, you can.
Okay, where can we find that?
You can find that at MartianSunMagazine.com.
Okay.
Next up is a returning writer and artist, Scott Larson. You may have heard him last year talking about his comic Visitations, and I stopped by his booth again and bought a few more issues. So we had the chance once again to chat about the comic and his artwork.
So last year we talked about like what Visitations is, and I bought 1 and 2. I thought 2 was really cool with the way you formatted and everything. But I can't remember how many you had out at the time.
So I had 8 out last year. Number 9 just came out.
Okay.
So, and I'll show you the format on number 9. So I reveal who the villain is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on the last page, just like any other comic book. Just like when I was reading Spider-Man. You know, who's the Hobgoblin? Yeah. There he is. And I didn't want anyone to look at the last page to find out who it was, so it's a connect the dots.
Oh, that's really cool. That is really cool.
So people've got to work for it. Now, I've been told by... So this came out... The first convention I had this at was Awesome Con in Washington, D.C. this year. I think I did... I did like 3 or 4 conventions before I made it to C2E2, which is my home base. I'm from Chicago.
Yeah.
And one of my fans bought it, and then about 15 minutes later, she came back with everything connected, letting me know I'm missing a number, which I am choosing to ignore for right now. And because I know they're all in there, I just don't know where it got hidden somewhere. So that's an extra added bonus for anyone who tries to connect the dots, is finding the number that is missing.
Yeah.
So that's new, and then there's a couple of new things happening. So I've taken a couple... It's not 2023 anymore.
I don't remember.
So I've taken a couple classes at the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon Art. I took a writing class with Amy Chu, who is here. And she had us do some short stories. So she said, well, you're going to do one story, and you're going to do it from basically conception to completion. And she said, but give me a couple of different like plots or summaries of what you want to do. So I came up with 5, and she said, these are all great. Which one are you going to do? And I said, all of them. She's like, no, you're only doing one for the class. Well, I did all of them, and I'm turning that into the next issue. So the next comic I do, which will be out in 2026, is going to be titled Interlude. And it's connected to the Visitations universe, but it's more superhero-based. There are Visitations characters that will appear, but it's kind of outside of the continuity of where it is. So number 9 ends on a cliffhanger, and people are going to have to wait a little bit longer to see what happens.
Just like a good comic.
Just like a good comic book. Well, you know, one of the things that I've read in the past was the Dresden Files, which is a book series about a wizard in Chicago. That's fake Chicago, by the way. The writer clearly has never been to Chicago. And I know that because Visitations is based in Chicago and I live in Chicago.
Yeah.
But he did that. He did this thing where he killed the Harry Dresden off. And then instead of like picking up the next story, he came out with a book in between. That's not why I'm doing it, but that's my excuse in case somebody asks.
Yeah.
And then the other classes I took at the Kubert School, there was a a coloring class and a lettering class. And I'm not going to tell you the teachers' names because I know I'm going to butcher them. But both classes were really, really, really great. And the end result was I took a look at my issues of visitations, and I saw where they needed work. Mm-hmm. I was horrified when I looked at my issues of visitations after taking the classes.
Yeah.
So 2026 is the 10th anniversary of the first issue of Visitations coming out. And in 2026, there will be a new edition of issue 1 and 2. The colors and the lettering will be changed in both. Mm. So I'm redoing the coloring and the lettering of those books in 2026. And hopefully, I'm going to have a trade paperback with both of those issues in there as well. And with the series in general, one of the things that I've done is I have gone back and I've George Lucas stuff, where I've fixed things that I felt needed to be fixed. And I've done that with all of the issues. So the issue number 1 you got last year had been massively revamped from the original.
Oh, cool.
And the one that's coming out next year is going to be massively revamped from the one that you've got. So, you know, for historical purposes, you'll have one of the mid-range ones. And so those are the new things that are coming up after this year.
I also notice you have a lot of these Art Deco posters. This historical Skyline poster is really cool, and a bunch of other prints and
yes.
things. So, those come first and then Visitations, or have you been doing it all?
So Visitations was the first.
Okay.
And what I started doing, because the first page of Visitations number 1 is the history of Chicago skyline.
Yeah.
And people in Chicago have bought that as a print from the very beginning. That was one of the first things I did when I released the first issue. And then once I started traveling around the country, I started doing that for every city that I go to.
Oh, nice.
And the reason is because everyone's hometown is important to them. You know, I'm wearing a Baltimore cap. Mm-hmm. There's Baltimore stuff on the table. There's no Chicago anywhere that can be seen, mm-hmm. except for the book if you actually look through it.
Yeah.
And I do that because everyone's hometown is important to them. I'm here for you guys, as is everybody else in Artist Alley, whether they realize it or not. And I try to represent where I am, and I try to make things geared towards wherever I go. And so one of the things you'll see here is, actually, I'm going to come out and I'll show you.
Yeah, sure.
So one of the things you see here is you've got the Art Deco cities that are available.
Yeah.
These are all the cities I've gone to so far.
Oh, that's cool.
And the history, the skyline as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave a ghost talk in New York. I do not have a skyline for New York. And originally I did not have a skyline for D.C. because I figured that stuff must exist because New York and D.C. are huge tourist attractions.
You know, they're widely
photographed. Not the case.
Oh, really?
There are photos of New York, but there's no artwork, and there's no artwork of the history of D.C. like that.
Wow.
And so I went back and I did that. So the Art Deco pieces, with the third issue of Visitations, I did that on the front page.
Okay.
And I thought it was cool, and so I started selling that as a print. And so I just started doing the Art Deco of all the cities as well.
All right. So if people are interested in Visitations, any of your stuff, where can they find you?
They can send me an email at visitationscomicbook@gmail.com.
Okay.
I'm on the internet all over the place, and of course I don't know what my addresses are, but I believe my Instagram is Scott J. Larson Art.
All right.
And I think my Facebook is something like that as well. I am not on X. I'm not on Blue Sky. I'm not on any of... It's just too much. No, it's all just too much.
Yeah.
But those are the main places where I am. I'm on LinkedIn as well as Scott Larson. And that's about it. But the best way to do it is to email me. And anyone who emails me can get a free digital copy of the first issue of Visitations.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure seeing you again.
You too. Thank you so much.
Take care.
One other comic creator I met was Dave Marsh, who was promoting his book Solstice Treaty, which is a book about Nazis, the occult, and some science fiction twists. He had two trades available. I bought them and hung out with him for a few minutes where we talked about his book and what you can get out of it.
So you are...
I can't remember. My name is Dave Marsh.
Okay. And so you're the author of the Solstice Treaty? Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Well, it's a book that I wrote in 2010. I actually had a Hollywood agent that brought the Die Hard books to movies, but I needed a lit agent. But in 2010, the only thing that lit agents were interested in were vampire romance novels. So not really into what I was doing with the Solstice Treaty, which is a urban fantasy, occult thriller, World War II alternate history book. So basically, I self-published that. And then a couple years ago, my dad passed away, and he was always a big fan of what I was doing. And I thought, as a cathartic type of thing, and to honor him, I would go ahead and bring these to comics because I love comics. I collect comics from the 60s and 70s. I'm a big fan of those, and a lot of Marvel Mania stuff. I found an artist in Italy, Jacopo Sigarini, and I started taking my novel and bringing it down into chapters, short chapters, bringing that here, and it's a book of stories about a guy named Luke Steele, who is a West Virginia forest ranger, and his estranged girlfriend, who is an ex-army captain who can't get away from her Appalachian roots fast enough. They find themselves in an otherworldly realm called the Evershade, and there's a war. They're caught in a war between two demigods, and then they uncover a plot that was hatched by the Third Reich in 1944 that is potentially going to bring about the end of the world today.
Actually sounds really, really cool. So you have two books out right now.
I've got two books out, working on the third book, but the really cool thing is I bought 50.com domains, and the cool thing is that there are words, there are phrases, there's QR codes, there's... symbols and things like that within the book that if you want to go further, you can go ahead and type in those .coms and get more world building. For example, the main Nazi officer is named Fritz von Ehrlichman. If you type in fritzvonehrlichman.com, you'll get a page with a telegram from Churchill to Eisenhower, and it's talking about how Ehrlichman is this new player in Himmler's inner circle. And so it gives you some background. Also, like in fantasy books, you always get these maps, right?
Yeah.
And these maps are like, where am I? I don't know where I'm at. It's got all these weird names. Well, here, if you type in, because it's called the Evershade, if you type in theevershade.com, you'll go to an interactive map. You can just pull down the chapter that you're in, and it will show you where your characters are, who they are, how they move through the world, so you get a better idea as you're doing that. Or else, like in this one, there's a... there's a book from the Book of the Dead right here, and it's all written in Latin, and you're like, well, I don't understand Latin, but if you type in this word, it's underlined, agaroth.com, it'll take you to it written in English. Now, not important, if you just want to read the books, they stand alone on their own, but if you want to have additional information, there's 50.coms, like there's a beer. There's a beer.
This is cool. I love the whole interactive, multimedia approach here.
So see this beer, Dante's Draft.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You go to Dante'sDraft.com or InfernoIPA.com, and you can hear a jingle. And in fact, let's hear the jingle right now.
That is.
So it's just another little thing. In fact, Dante's Draft was founded in 1944, so it all ties together. So there's fun things like that. There's things that, again, you can follow it with the map. But ultimately, I design slot machines for a living. It's a full-time job. My part-time job is making video games. And so really what I'm looking for is a publisher, somebody that will believe in this as well and take it on.
All right. If people were interested in checking out, purchasing the book online or something, where would they find it?
Yeah, so really, they would have to contact me, and I would do that. I'm not selling it online currently because this is my first foray into this. This is my first time I've ever manned a booth. But if they go to thesolstice.treaty.com or my video game company, Zojoy, Zojoy.com, it's got a link, and you can learn everything you want to know about it.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course, not everyone in Artist Alley is promoting a comic, and instead they're selling their artwork, their wares, if you will. Brett has been a big fan of the Nerdware store ever since they started coming here and were old enough to just wander around by themselves. So I marked Nerdware on my map and I swung by and I decided to talk to the owner or nerd behind the ware.
So I've been going here for a number of years and I recognize your booth because I used to bring my kid with me. Now they're in college, so they can't come this year. Yeah. And they always grab something from you. So how did you come about putting all of this together? And like what was your inspiration? And talk a little bit about like what you actually made.
Yeah, so it was sort of a 2-week quarantine brainchild. Way back at the end of 2020, I was quarantined to see my parents, and I have been a nerd my whole life. Love Lord of the Rings, love Star Wars, and I've also done art my whole life. And I brought them together in an Etsy shop. I wanted a way to share my love of fandom and my love of art and whimsy. And so I started with pins. I was a pin collector, like loved getting into it. Started with pins, added prints, and just like started to make all the things that I love about fandom and fantasy and whimsy. And, yeah.
And if anybody is interested in finding you, can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm at the Nerdware store on Instagram. I have a shop and Etsy. And then I pop up at Baltimore Comic Con and a couple other Comic Cons around the country. For fun,
And I did not get your name. And
Lillian. No, you're good. Lillian Allery.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Finally, there was my favorite pick of the artist in Artist Alley this year. Monica Norcross-Sermara, who was selling these really, really cool prints of various characters and had this like mid-century modern vibe to it. I bought a really cool looking Frankenstein's monster as well as a Bride of Frankenstein print. And if she's there next year, I'm definitely coming back. But we had a great conversation about her artwork and what inspires her and how she produces it.
So I came over here because, like, my wife especially loved the whole mid-century modern Jetson space agey thing. You are, so I get your name.
My name is Monica, Monica Norcross.
Okay, so what inspired you to go, like, this route of...
Ironically, the Jetsons, growing up watching that mid-century modern aesthetics, Mary Blair from Disney is a huge inspiration for me. I love her limited palette and very graphical style. And then even in the 2000s with the Cartoon Network, resurgence of that mid-century modern style with Foster's Home, Powerpuff Girls, and Fairly Odd Parents. I just like the simplicity of the character design, and what makes the style so unique is the lack of contour lines, so everything is very shapely without having an outline, and it's just it's a fun challenge to try to not feel so contained within your colors and your shapes.
And so you did the prints and posters, you did some paper cutouts.
Yes.
What do you normally like work with in terms of like a medium or software? How do you do your work?
So I usually start, pen and paper, sketching out your thumbnailing and everything. And then I use an iPad with Procreate, and I usually just use like really three brushes. I use a pencil, and then I use a gouache type brush to help get my field of color. For the paper cut, I'll transform the sketches into a vector, and I'll use a Cricut or Caesar cutting machine to help me get the cuts nice and clean and crisp. And if need be, I'll go through it by hand. But I like using the machine because then I can at least maybe make multiple so a lot of people can have the same special piece over and over again. Otherwise, I'll scan it, and then you can get it as a print. And the same thing with the lenticulars. Everything is done by hand. I'll score the paper and fold it and very meticulously cut up the pieces of the prints and make sure everything doesn't get out of alignment. But it's a fun, very zen process when you're not stressed out.
Yeah, that is cool.
It also keep your cats away from everything.
I can imagine.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite subject, or because there's a lot of Star Wars stuff
yes.
in here, there's the Powerpuff Girls. Do you have like a favorite that you'd love to keep coming back to?
I mean, Star Wars, and really allow me to do this, the Star Wars official account retweeted one of my pieces.
Oh, wow.
So this Princess Leia, it was one of my first paper cut pieces. They reached out and they shared it. And then I have a dancer, that went viral on TikTok. And I always love theater. So these two pieces I always tend to lean back to. And anything spacey, I think really leads towards that Jetsons Bewitched 5.
That's kind of giving Gwen Stacy a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I've never thought about that. Yeah. Exactly.
The headband, at least,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was going to say Gwen Vernon was Bob Fosse's partner. So yeah. I was thinking, we're like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's true, too.
The comic book.
Yes,
so
I mean.
Do you have formal theater training, formal art training? I mean, like, what's your background with all of this?
It's so funny. In high school, I was so, like, performative art. I wanted to be on theater. I wanted to be in band and everything. But I've always been a huge fan of animation, and I love the performance with that. So after college, I wanted to get a degree in animation. That's actually where I met my husband, who's also an animator. That's my husband, Mike. Like, Mike likes apples. So with animation, I love the performance element. So it brings the drawing and the performance together, and it's the best of both worlds for me.
So if people want to find you, where can they find you?
I'm on all the socials, Monica Animated. It's Monica with a K, not with a C. My parents wanted to be very unique. I'm very active on Instagram, TikTok, as long as we have it. And I've been trying to get my YouTube up and going because I like to show the process of the paper cuts and the lenticulars. But I'm just trying to figure out the best way of actually showcasing that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for Artist Alley. I'm going to take another break. And when I get back, you'll hear me talk about everything I bought.
None of this would have happened. It wasn't for you opening your legs and insulting your rightful master.
He was never my master.
Oh, Queen, defend your children and your country.
Her soft, persuasive words are deadly.
Her guards will fight on my side while I show her for the liar that she is.
I don't know how all this happened. I just wanted to love you.
No. He wanted to own me. He stole her youth and promised heaven. The men start wars, yet Troy hates heaven. Women's hearts are lethal weapons. Did you hold mine and feel threatened? Hear my lyrics, taste my venom. You are still my great obsession.
Dear Reader, Season 3. Join me, Stella, as I look at the Bronze Age epic poem, The Iliad, by Homer, and the books, films, TV shows, and more that it has inspired in the thousands of years since it was first spoken into existence. Was a decade-long war really the fault of one woman? Did the heroes we have long heard about fight with honor and exhibit virtue? And what part did the gods and goddesses have to play? Listen and find out. Coming soon to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
The best you'll ever have, it's the history of man.
Hector! Now, for the past, every year, I think, since I've done this, the post-show segment is usually done in the car. Brett and I will drive down 95. And they will open all the mystery packs and stuff, but Brett wasn't there. So I decided to record myself sorting through everything, books, merchandise, and mystery boxes the following day. I actually was in Brett's room because it was a place I could put all the stuff and spread it out. So it's a little bit clearer than you would hear on the highway, although I was moving around a lot, so there's probably a lot of shuffling. I did my best to clean any audio up, and here it is.
Yeah, so I am here the day after the con, and I have all the stuff that I got spread out on Brett's bed because Brett's not here. They're away at college, so I don't have to worry about it's not being used. There's a lot to go through. All right, so let's talk trades. So one of the things that I did was, aside from going among, you know, the back issue bins and those sorts of things, I hit up a couple of booths that had like $3 or $5 trades. It's been a while since I've done that. Mainly because DC Comics and Marvel Comics stuff in trade is not something I buy a ton of these days, especially DC, since a lot of what's in trade I can just read online unless I really want the trade or the hardcover. And I actually have an example of that I'm going to tell you about. But some of the indie stuff looked really interesting, and I was like, well, if it's a $3 trade and it sucks, I've only lost $3 on it. So I have a huge pile of graphic novels and trade paperbacks. The first two of The Fade Out by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I read Fatal. I've been reading the Reckless hardcovers and really just about everything Brubaker's put out over the last few years. So I'm looking forward to this. Neverland Volume 1, which looks like a dark and magical reimagination of Peter Pan. So might be interesting. A comics anthology of Southeast Asian writers and artists called Sound Impaler, Volume 1. So that'll be good for Horror Comics Month. Midnight Radio, which was put out by Lion Forge a number of years ago. I got Volumes 3 and 4 of Stumptown, the Greg Rucka mystery series, which I actually own the first two of, so that's awesome. I've been wanting to finish that, and to find them for this cheap, I was really excited. I've been going back and collecting the Countdown to Infinite Crisis trades, so I managed to find the OMAC Project and Villains United, and I own the Rand Thanagar War, and I'm pretty sure I own Day of Vengeance. Grass Kings, Volume 2 and 3. This is Matt Kent and Tyler Jenkins. Slow Burn. This looks really interesting. You know, if I find I'm getting into, and this has been happening over the years, like a lot more genre stuff, crime. This is some of the coming of age stuff. Definitely horror this year. A little bit of sci-fi. I bought from a guy whose label or published independent publishing thing is called Artichoke Presents. And it's a book of his sketches and short stories. It's called Sketches and Streams. I forgot to record him. The way he explained it was interesting. And I have to admit, I kind of got suckered by going over to go to his table because I was going back and forth across Artist Alley. And when I go next year, I should wear my glasses because I kept squinting at the signs and things. And that kind of was like a tell. So he was like, he came over and he just started, got the sales pitch. And I was like, all right, I'll buy this one. So hopefully it's good. All right. And I think that does it with trades. Oh no. The hardcover edition of Camelot 3000, the deluxe edition. It was usually $34.99. It was a 50% off at the Third Eye Comics booth. So I got that. Now, granted, I own all 12 issues of the series, but this looks gorgeous and really looking forward to rereading that. It's been a while since I read that whole series all the way through. Now I'm down to, I've got comics, I've got posters and prints and things like that. I did buy one t-shirt. It's this really cool t-shirt, Darth Vader's TIE Fighter flying and shooting with a green background behind it, almost like Death Star looking thing. I got it from the same booth where I got the Alderaan and Endor t-shirts a couple of years back. Now let's talk stuff that I got for Brett, which was a lot of small merch, couple of mystery packs, bookmarks, stickers, those sorts of things. I got a couple of stickers for Amanda and for my own laptop at work. What I like about that is, you know, the people are charging at the booth $3 or like 3 for $5 or whatever, and there's only so many times you can stop at cute stuff booths in Artist Alley. So it was nice to pick up some stickers here and there and chat with them a little bit. Prints that I got Amanda this really cool Maleficent print that was, I think, similar to one of the covers of one of the comic books. I got a Frankenstein, it was Pat Sims, I believe. He had a color one, but he also had this, you know, copied right off the comics page with the blue line pencils and things like that. And I thought that really looked a lot cooler than the color one. So I bought that. I went and saw Angela McKendrick again. I'm not kidding when I say I bought like 6 or 7 prints from her over the years. We have a triptych of Carnage, Spidey, and Venom down in the basement. That's Brett's. Amanda has a Captain Carter poster as well as a Wonder Woman poster from her. And then I have the Vizzini poster that she's done. And then I bought this Alien print that is really cool looking. It's just a xenomorph with the mouth open and drooling and the teeth behind it. A really awesome Star Trek recruitment poster, Strange New Worlds. Explore Strange New Worlds, seek out new civilizations. The Enterprise, it looks, Starfleet needs you. It's very retro looking. And then got Brett a Godzilla print, Spawn from the Depths of the Ocean, Godzilla, Long Live the King, and it's got Godzilla breathing fire on it. Again, it looks very classic kind of sci-fi poster. Got Brett a couple of prints with Warhammer on them. Brett's been playing Warhammer for a very long time now, so I was trying to find stuff for them. Brett is a huge fan of the Cartoon Network, so I think it's Cartoon Network show, Over the Garden Wall, and the booth Pretend Erin, and I can't remember her name, was selling these two prints, and I bought them for them because they look really cool, and they're going to really, really like that. I'll print a cool-looking Hollow Knight journal. Like I said, a couple of random mystery bags, some prints and postcards, a bag to keep it all in. So I think they'll really like that. Like I said, I do have a couple of mystery packs. I'm saving that for just a little bit. I do want to go through the back issues that I bought. I bought the entire Andy Helfer run, The Shadow. It was 20 issues, 1 through 19 in the annual. It was a $40 package, but I remember reading an issue of this, and I remember kind of liking it, but I didn't want to collect the whole series because I wasn't going to commit to it. And I have or had the Chaikin series at some point. I don't know if I still do. I have to check downstairs. But this, I've heard good things about, and it's a character who, you know, I'm still kind of trying to figure out. So this was worth getting. And if I don't like it, I can always send it on to somebody else in the comic book circle of life, you know? All right, here we go. Some prestige books. Batman Dark Allegiances by Howard Chaykin. Issue 1 of Superman Last Son on Earth by Steve Gerber. I have, did go to my LCS today, and I found issue 2, so I have the whole thing. I have the Just Imagine Stan Lee's Shazam, which has an Adam Hughes cover on one side and a Gary Frank cover on the other. I have to be completely honest with you, I can't remember if I have this one. I bought a bunch of them at like a quarter bin sale a year or two ago, and they're sitting on my shelf and I've read through them. So I may have to figure out whether or not I have it. I got, speaking of The Shadow, Grendel versus The Shadow 2 and 3. So I need issue number 1. I did not find it in my LCS. So I'm going to see if I can track that down at some point, because I like Matt Wagner. I like Grendel. I have both Batman Grendel crossovers, which I've picked up over the last year or two. And those are great, so this should be pretty interesting. Captain America Sentinel of Liberty, this four-part prestige series that was written by Fabian Yassiazin, penciled by Kevin McGuire and Joe Rubinstein. So I've seen this in back issue bins a number of times, and I want to say I read one issue of it at one point, but it's pretty cool to get all four. There was a two-pack, but the two-pack was $1, so I got all four for $2, which was 50 cents an issue. I got 3 issues of Batman Urban Legends. This is a series I started collecting in back issues because I found a ton of them at a quarter bin sale. So I'm going to try to fill in the holes and read through the whole thing. For the ones I read, I found was really, really interesting and really, really cool. I'm not that much into a lot of current Batman. I'll pick some stuff up here and there, but I'm always up for a decent story. You know, not enough to really get into collecting the character again hardcore, but you know, I won't pass something up. So filling in some more holes on my run of Eric, Son of Thunder, 21, 28, 23, 24, and 25. So I'm getting up to where I need like a number of the upper issues of that. A EC Comics reprint of War Against Crime. I like buying these EC reprint series. They're so fun. Filling in my run of Action Comics Weekly. I've got like a handful of these to find, and they're kind of a pain lately. 610 and 640. I've been trying to collect the Green Lantern story in that. I've been wanting to read that for years, and the only issue I ever read was 601, where Cat Matui gets killed. For some strange reason, at a dollar bin, and maybe because it was a dollar each, I bought all 6 issues of Slash Maraud. I got the Roy Thomas, Tom Mandrake, Shazam, The New Beginning, all 4 issues of that. I've never read that before. That'll be pretty cool to read. I've been collecting a lot of horror comics, like I said, so I've been buying the EC line that Oni has started putting out again, and I came across Boom's Hello Darkness book through Free Comic Book Day. So I put that on my pull list. So I have a few to fill in. I got issue number 4. I have a few to fill in there. I finally tracked down issue 4 of Death in the Family, Robin Lives, because I didn't have it for years. I was just like, ever since it came out, for some reason I missed this. So, or it was just not put in my box or whatever, but I did finally get it. So I'm going to go back and reread that. I got a complete set of the 4-issue Firestar miniseries from the mid-80s. I've read like 1 issue of it, I believe. And I could probably read it on Marvel Unlimited, but it was $7. So that's pretty cool. There were a couple other things where I was like, oh, I would love to pick this up. But if I'm being completely honest with you, they were a little more expensive. Like, I can't really justify buying this huge brick of comics for this. I did see that they had the entire Nightwing run, and like that whole series, I think, for $350 at this one booth. And that was pretty good for those books. But yeah, and then there was a girl next to me when I was at the dollar booth hunting down Nightwing issues, which was really cool. We talked about Nightwing for a little bit. Green Lantern Corps Quarterly 3 and 4. I want to say I may have actually read one of these at one point and thrown it away, but I will see what we got. I always love random Green Lantern Corps specials, even going back to the 80s, even in the 90s. Got a Zenoscope convention exclusive book for free. I've never read any of their books. I will see if any of these in here are worth giving a try if they carry them at my LCS. The last 2 issues of Quasar. I have a handful of the book from, I've read, I have the trade of the first several issues. I have a handful of those issues here and there. I've read most of it on Marvel Unlimited, and the back end of it, I'd say issue like maybe 45 or 46 onward, I've been trying to collect in single issue, because at least the last time I checked, it wasn't on Marvel Unlimited. So I think I need like about 3 or 4 issues, but it was pretty cool to get the last 2. Again, series like that, those last issues are sometimes hard to come by because they just kind of faded away and had a low print run. I picked up this, and Stella was giving me crap for buying smut, but I picked up Army at Love, which was a Rick Veitch, Gary Erskine Vertigo book from 2007, and it looks like kind of a, I don't know what this is, like kind of a combination of war and romance, and I was just like, this looks like it might be kind of kooky. I got every issue. I think I'm missing like 2 issues in here. And I don't know if it's an anthology series, if there's a whole through line of the story. I did go to my LCS and look for the back issues that I'm missing, but I could not find them. I might try again. I might have been looking at our Army of Love instead of Army at Love. So I will have to go back in that. I mentioned Slash Maraud, and I also found the kind of a little bit of a bent copy, but the Peter David George Perez series Sax and Violence, which came out, I believe, in the early 1990s, and I got it for $1. And what's funny is that I got it out of Comics and Gaming's boxes, and I believe Comics and Gaming is up in Warrenton, Virginia, or Gainesville or something, like fairly, maybe an hour and a half away from here. They had bought out Fantasia Comics, or gotten a bunch of books from an old comic shop here called Fantasia Comics, because I'm seeing 2 locations in Charlottesville, the one called Pepper, from back in like 1994. Atlas, when it was still called Atlas, had a ton of Fantasia Comics books. So it must have been like, you know, somebody, they took over, and these things kind of circulate. I got 2 of the 4 issues of James Tynion and Martin Simmons' Dracula adaptation, which looks really badass, and I'm trying to see if I can find the other 2. I got the 80-page giant JLA The Century War, which looks kind of interesting, and Detective Comics 500, which I either paid $3 or I just paid $7 for it, but again, a book that I was like, oh, this is really, you know, just one of those anniversary comics, cool things that I've read one story from, because of course I read To Kill a Legend, which is in here because it's in the greatest Batman stories ever told, but that's pretty cool. And finally, my last back issue that is sitting right next to me is the updated from the 90s, I believe it is, the official handbook of the Conan universe. Again, I can't pass these things up. One day, I am going to find the last two issues of Who's Who in the Legion of Superheroes, and I'm going to be very, very happy when I do. And we're going to get to some unboxings. So, first, this is the second time I've done something like this, bought something like this. The whole idea of a blind date with a book, which is somebody wraps a paperback really nicely in wrapping paper, and they put some goodies in it, and what they do is they put a description of the book on the top of the wrapping paper, and this says, people drawn together by terrifying visions, missing memories, and a darkness that ties them all to one chilling secret. Some truths are too big to run from. The genre is horror. The age is 16 plus. And I was like, you know what, I don't know, it's like I said, you can always donate books you don't like. And a couple of weeks ago, my LCS had a LCS day, and somebody was selling these, and I got, it was like a thriller, and I haven't read it. It's called The Second Wife. I haven't read it yet, but I do intend to read it. So what comes in this is a really cool looking sticker that says old book, strong coffee and long nights. And then just one more chapter, a pen. It's one of the really cool felt tip paper mate pens that I love using when I edit. So that's awesome. A book review, looks like a book review bookmark. A bag of tea, hot cinnamon spice black tea. The other one that I had cocoa in it. So, all right, let me put this down and I will open the book. Strangers by Dean Koontz. I have never read any Dean Koontz. So, yeah, cool. All right, now the big one, or the big three. Went to Third Eye Comics. Third Eye Comics was my very last stop on the tour because over the last couple of years, I've bought their mystery box. So I'm not carrying the damn mystery box around. They always have a ton of them available. It's not like they're going to run out. So I went and did that right before I left the convention center. And I also bought a mystery pack because why not buy more comics? So they have a free Third Eye starter pack, which they're like, if you sign up for our mailing list, you get these freebies. I'm like, I'm already on your mailing list. And she's like, go ahead and take one. So let's open that up. Third Eye Comics, by the way, has a number of locations in Maryland, Virginia. There's one in Richmond, which is about an hour away from here. I do intend to visit it at some point. Because I'm like, you know, just that'd be fun to do because I'm always at their booth at the con. All right, save that bag. All right. They have a thank you letter, a sticker, a map of their superstores, and a Godzilla comic, a Third Eye Blind IDW Third Eye Blind exclusive. I'm totally saving this for Brett. Brett is a huge Godzilla freak. So there you go. All right. The lucky bag. We have current Wonder Woman series by Tom King, number 14. Kevin Smith presents Archie meets Jay and Silent Bob. The Unchosen, number one, by David Marquez, Marissa Louise, and DC Hopkins. Nyx, number four, from Marvel. Absolute Power, number one, from DC, although I will admit I think I had this at one point. Or, no, I had the free comic book day thing. Marvel Rivals, number one. Hey, is that Jeff the Land Shark? Cool. Scarlet, number one, from Image, I believe this is. I haven't read a lot of the more recent G.I. Joe stuff, so this might be pretty cool. Polybagged Wolverine Revenge, number one. It's a red band comic. An Uncanny X-Men comic, number 17. It's the Gail Simone series, and it looks like a movie poster. Murder Me, Mutina. And I've seen this as recently just put up on Marvel Unlimited, but I haven't read it, so I'll give that a try. Silverhawks, number one, from Dynamite. You know, of all of the properties that they've put out comics for and stuff, I never, ever watched an episode of Silverhawks back in the day. I don't even think I knew it was on. Helen of Windhorn, issue one, from Dark Horse. Batman, number 159. This is Hush 2. I don't know what part of Hush 2 this is. A Planet Death, Bad idea. It looks like a preview, number zero. Okay, I remember getting the preview a couple years ago. Adventure Man number one from Image. Matt Fraction, Terry Dodson. Okay. A facsimile edition of Adventure Comics number 210, which is the first appearance of Crypto. So that's the mystery pack. That's actually a pretty good haul of comics. Some of those look really interesting. All right, let's open the mystery box. 25 comics, 3 variants, 1 Funko Pop. One of every 25 now has a $10 gift card. That would be cool. A Naruto Pop. I'm not... Boruto. Naruto Next Generations. Yeah, not in my wheelhouse. May just offload this to somebody. All right, we got a pin. Ooh, a Galactus pin. Very cool. All right, here we go. Avengers Twilight 6. Scorched from Image number 42. Spider-Man. Venom War. I guess it's the Miles Morales Spider-Man number 3. Venom War Spider-Man number 3, sorry. Another Bad Idea 0. Energon Universe number 1. Batman 158. So that's another... Oh, this is the, so 158 is the first part of Hush 2. 159 is part 2. All right. Dust to Dust number 1 by J.G. Jones and Phil Bram. This might be interesting. I like J.G. Jones's art. So this looks like a Western. The Seasons number 1. Where this really... crazy looking court gesture thing on the thing holding an envelope. The Killers Affairs of the State number 1 from Boom. Giant Size X-Men number 2, that's fairly recent. I believe Joe Kelly is doing this, so I think there's a fairly recent one. These are, a lot of these are fairly recent comics. Spider-Boy number 20. The Amazing Spider-Man most recent, I think, believe is the most recent series, number 6. Jim Henson Presents number 4 from Boom. Space Ghost Johnny Quest Space Quest number 3 from Dynamite. Star Wars High Republic Adventures from Dark Horse number 14. A repeat of the Silverhawks number 1, okay. Bug Wars number 1, Jason Aaron, the writer from Image. Iron Man, no, Wolverine number 1. Fairly recent... so many number ones relaunching and stuff like that. Web of Spider-Man number 1. Again, these are recent comics. So this is JRJR has a cover here. Wolverine number 8. It was Legacy number 400. Blood Hunt number 5 of 5. I think I've read this. I think I had this in last year's. Ultimate Spider-Man number 19, the more recent version of it. Another one of the Crypto facsimile. Doom number 1. The same Wolverine red band. This looks like a Power Rangers variant. A Red Sonja cosplay, photo cosplay variant. A King in Black number 1 variant. And then the a trade paperback JLA JSA Virtue and Vice. And yeah, so that is it. No $10 gift certificate in here, which is kind of a bummer. It would have been pretty cool to get one. But... got a ton of really good stuff. And I mean, like I said a couple of times already, I had such a blast and it was so much fun. And I'm really looking forward to whatever convention I go to next year, because I really would like to try to do the meetup convention. I did have to see which one they're doing and do the overnight thing, because one of my bucket list, or what I call my 50 things to do before 50 items, is to go to a convention for more than one day. And... you know, have a, and space it out, a signing day, a buying day, a hanging out day, or whatever. And maybe I'll be able to do that next year. But if not, I will be going to the Baltimore Comic Con again, definitely. So I'm going to take a quick break. And when I get back, I do have some listener feedback. You'll hear that on the other side of this. So stick around.
Well, hi there. This is Huckleberry Hound. And when I'm not busy making movies or TV shows, I enjoy listening to my favorite internet radio show, Two True Freaks. They got all sorts of shows for y'all to listen to, covering all sorts of geeky topics. Star Trek, Star Wars, cartoons, scary movies, folks eating supper, music, giant monsters, and one feller who buys stuff at garage sales. And the funny books. My word, the funny books. Old funny books. New funny books. Scary funny books. Movies about funny books. Funny books about movies. British fellers talking about funny books. And lots more. So why don't you check these fellers out? Head on over to twotruefreaks.com and tell them Huckleberry sent you. Two True Freaks, chock full of great podcasts since 2008. Sounds great, Mr. Hound. Thanks for coming in today. Oh, no problem, fellers. Now, if y'all'll excuse me, I have to run. I'm shooting a movie. It's a Western, and if y'all see Quick Draw McGraw, don't tell him. He's still hot at me about the good, the bad, and Huckleberry Hound. And once he gets all El Kabong, he's a pain in the you-know-where. And then there was this one time that he and Baba Louie had a little too much sarsaparilla, and Quick Draw said something to McGilla Gorilla that I won't repeat, you understand? We were shooting Yogi's Gang, and things got mighty tense. Boo Boo, and Boo Boo's a great feller, real sharp, love working with him. Boo Boo kept it all from Yogi, you understand? But boy, I tell you.
TwoTrueFreaks.com. Tell them Huckleberry sent you.
So to wrap up the episode, I have a piece of feedback. It's not for this show, though. See, back in the spring, I was a panelist on Professor Allen's two-part How We Podcast special over at the Relatively Geeky Network, along with myself and Alan, were Luke Giacometti, Derek William Crabb, and Bill Beer. It was a great set of episodes. The conversation was incredibly fun, and the email I got about it was from Shag. He writes, and this is for all of us, "Hi, Alan, Tom, Bill, Derek, and Luke. I am woefully behind in my podcast listening. However, this week I had a chance to listen to the two-part Howie podcast episode from May. Holy crap. This discussion was one of my favorites I have heard in ages. Clearly, I am a biased target audience being a podcaster myself, but I absolutely loved this discussion. Every topic, every answer, every thought shared, I was completely invested. Thank you for sharing this with the world. It was exceptional. As you might imagine, I was talking back to my podcast player throughout the episodes, desperate to be part of the discussion. So many fantastic strategic and tactical ideas shared. I jotted down some thoughts while listening. First, like Luke suggested when picking a topic, I typically only worry about recording for myself. I try not to worry about what other people want, but instead find a topic I will enjoy discussing. It just feels healthier to chase my own joy than to worry about satisfying everyone else. In the end, if others were enjoyed listening, then it's just a bonus. Regarding the technical side and how we distribute Fire and Water Podcast Network shows, we use the following. WordPress blog post. Using the Blueberry plugin creates the RSS feed, and I learned that from fellow podcaster Ben Avery. We then send it through FeedBurner. We direct podcasters like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon to grab the FeedBurner feed. Like Alan indicated, it's a shame that FeedBurner has lost much of its previous functionality. For promotional purposes, I personally use Buffer.com to schedule my social media post. You can schedule up to 10 social media messages in advance, and a free account will allow you to access three different social media platforms like Facebook, X/Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads, and more. It works great, and hear that, it is free. Regarding with hindsight, things I would do differently, be sure your show name is very descriptive for your content. The goal being to help search engine optimization. For instance, if you were going to do a podcast about, oh, let's say Aquaman and Firestorm, naming your show the Fire and Water Podcast is not going to exactly make it easy for people to find your show if they are Googling Aquaman or Firestorm. Thankfully, 5 years into the show, we rebranded as Aquaman and Firestorm, the Fire and Water Podcast. Similar to what several people were saying on these episodes, I also used to be much more negative on my podcast. I've definitely made a concerted effort to be more positive on the air. There's already so much negativity in our fandom. Nowadays, I prefer to find my joy in my fandom. Being happy is much less stressful than being negative. These are just some of the thoughts I scratched down while listening and desperately wanting to chime in on the discussion, and a bonus was hearing my own name mostly taken in vain. throughout the episodes, LOL. Again, wow, just wow. Thank you for such an entertaining discussion. Would love to hear more on this topic or similar roundtables. The irredeemable Shag of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You know, I hadn't seen Shag, I think, since the last time they did the Baltimore Comic Con as the big meetup. So that would have been like 8 years ago or so. In fact, I told Shag Brett was in college. They were like, no way. Brett's this kid. It was like, yep. And I was glad to see Stella again. It was great meeting Harrison Shute. It was great to see the Sutherlands once again. And I got to meet Tim Price as well as Steve Lacy, which was really awesome. I had a great time. And I mean, like I said, I would have gone there anyway, but it was really, really cool to just be with all these people again. I guess I have one regret, is that I didn't really stay longer. Okay, I have two regrets, because I was a sweaty, soaked mess by the end of the day because I was hauling around all of this stuff and it was hot in the convention center. And I had an extra t-shirt in my bag because it was the convention t-shirt. I should have gone into the bathroom and changed, and I didn't. Broke one of my cardinal rules of convention going, because I had done that years and years ago. I changed my shirt because of the fact that it was hot. Next year, it's at the end of September, so I'm definitely bringing a change of a shirt. I just really, really enjoyed myself. And I don't know why I always get so surprised that we have such a great community of people. It's probably because of, like, you know, years of psychological damage done by quote unquote friends who were just real assholes to me anyway. But that aside, genuinely great, nice people who are just fun to be around and support each other and talk to. And I was just blown away by just how much fun I had at random and then by myself. And that's what you want out of a convention like this. So I, again, if you've never been, I really recommend going. It's so comics centered, so comics focused, and there's so much you can do and get. And as you heard, I picked up a lot of stuff and spent a lot of money, but you know, that's what you plan on doing, and that makes it even more fun. So thanks for coming along with me. Now, what am I going to do with the next episode? Well, it'll be out probably the week of Thanksgiving, and I guess you'll just have to figure out what that's going to be, right? So until then, go to the blog, see the show notes for pictures. I will try to update and post to the Instagram account more, and you can still find me on Blue Sky and Facebook as well. And as always, thank you very much for listening, and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panneries. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's PopAff. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.